money and markets. The market is very nervous and in my opinion, overly so given the fundamentals, but let's talk through it. I mean, one obviously is the China economic slowdown and the capital outflow they're experiencing. Another is the emerging markets struggling with lower oil revenues and the banks struggling with the debt loads from the commodity producers. And that's not just oil and gas producers or coal producers, it's also all the sovereign countries and municipalities that depend on those revenues. We're also seeing a divergence in the central banking policies. So the Bank of Japan and the EU are still on their QE programs, but now the Fed is finished with QE and is raising interest rates. So we see a divergence for the first time in many years. Another big question is how strong is the EU going to be? It's remember after now China, the EU is the biggest consumer market. We great concerns about the future of the European Union as the UK potentially will have a referendum this year. So what will the UK's role be? And then what is migration doing to Europe? It's clearly an extraordinary burden on both the population and the leaders. We had the head of Davos warn that the current refugee crisis could be a precursor to something much bigger, saying that a collapse of the oil price in North Africa could send 1 billion people or more headed north. Now, I'm a little bit of a skeptic because those people need financing to travel as far as they can. As Europe, and if you look at what's happening with refugees coming into Europe, there's somebody's financing it. But I think the biggest problem is leadership. And as I said, I think the market reaction is much greater. There's an overreaction given the fundamentals, but there's a breakdown of trust within and between leadership, and then within and between people, and between leadership and people. So I'm seeing a real breakdown of trust, and that's what concerns me. So I want to walk through that just a bit. First of all, there are just too many people making money by stealing and destroying pies, and it's not just in the leadership, it's in the general population. There are not enough people baking pies and free to do so without someone messing up and stealing their pie. So it really comes down in an economy to how many people are doing things that increase the total economic return as opposed to just increase their own return. So, if you look at any of the things I've talked about with the Saleri model, the goal is to always increase your returns by finding ways of adding value to the total economic return. And where you have a tipping point of too many people destroying the total economic return and making money by destroying the total economic return, then you've got a real problem. And that's part of the leadership problem today. But let's look at some of the others. We're moving from a unipolar world to a multipolar world, and that has profound ramifications for leadership. Leaders who grew up and know how to manage in a unipolar world are uniquely not qualified to deal in a multipolar world. You've often heard me, I used to always say, those who play in a rigged game get stupid. The reality is, when you're in a unipolar world and you can look to the hierarchy to tell you what's going to happen and to protect you, it makes life simple. It's one of the reasons U.S. leaders grossly oversimplify and look stupid to people around the world. And part of it is they've got that hierarchy, and that hierarchy is backed by force. This really happens where you have managed markets because markets tend to reground. You know, they send a message back. They're constantly regrounding. Where markets can't work, you can get very, you know, the fundamental economics can get very, very far away from economic fundamentals. And that's part of what's happened. There was a comment by one of the commentators from the Fusion on the meeting of world leaders in Davos. And I just wanted to read it because it's a perfect example of what happens when you go to a unipolar to multipolar world and people aren't ready for it. The bankers and policymakers aren't even faking it anymore and increasingly willing to admit that they have no idea what's happening and no idea what to do about it. Oil prices are at a level no one could have predicted just a few months ago. That's true, including me. And no one knows how long it will stay so cheap. That alone injects enormous amounts of uncertainty in the global outlook. After all, the oil price has a direct effect on pretty much everything. Wars in the Middle East, politics in Venezuela, terrorism in Nigeria, the likelihood of a global credit crunch, you name it. The oil and gas industry is responsible for most of the losses that fixed income investors have taken of late, and that's just one of many unknown variables out there. Very good comment. The other fear you saw expressed out of Davos was fear about robotics. There's an article we put up on the website, Davos Robot Eclipses Davos Man as Gloom Descends on Elite, from Bloomberg. I think we've unleashed a whole world of technology, and when that technology goes to work in a multipolar world, you not only have many different power centers in terms of the political leadership, but now you have many different power centers in terms of the consumer market and what I call the field. I mean, you now got more than double the people on the internet in China than you have in the United States. And theoretically, those 3.5 billion people can communicate and trade with each other. So things can shift, and the variability of scenarios is much wider in a multipolar world. Okay, so let's keep going. Let's look at the failure of U.S. unipolar leadership. The world is dependent on the U.S. to manage the reserve currency and to manage the sort of the global military that protects the sea lanes and other aspects of security. The reality is we're all sick of the neocons. It's one of the reasons that the Iran deal was such a slap back at Israel and the neocons. But I think the world is sick of oversimplification combined with force. I think part of what we're watching in terms of lack of confidence in the U.S. leadership is a real rejection of not only the neocon strategies, but of their culture. The second thing is the U.S. presidential damage, in my opinion, is doing enormous damage to the U.S. brand globally. We're watching a lot of childish behavior. We're watching front runners who are espousing policies which are certifiably insane. And we're watching a real inferiority of candidate, in my opinion. The reality is the U.S. presidency is not a entry-level position, and it's also not a position for people with huge negatives who've been racketeering for years. A lot of the older candidates belong in a unipolar world. They're not going to make it in a multipolar world. And one reason is you just, beyond a certain age, you don't have the physical energy to do it. And the reality is if you watch some of the behavior in the fourth quarter, I'll never forget when Trump went off the rails on saying Muslims should not be allowed in the country. He's basically saying 24% of the world's of the global population should not be allowed in America, which is basically saying, you know, to 20% or so of all the money in the world, leave. And I took one look at that and said, you know, if I was a global financial institution, I'd pull my money out of America. I mean, it's pretty scary. And sure enough, at the end of the fourth quarter, bam, what's happening? A lot of people are pulling their money out. And I flew back from California, so I never get colds. But of course, when I fly, I get a cold. So that's why you can hear a cold in my voice, because I flew. And I changed planes at DFW and walked through two terminals. And on every terminal monitor was Sarah Palin endorsing Donald Trump. And I have to tell you, you know, it looked like kindergarten. It was frightening. And all I could think every time I looked at it is, you know, the planet's going to pull their money out of America now. That's not necessarily making it true, but I have to tell you, there are money managers all over the planet who are watching this and saying nothing good can happen when the global political leadership and financial leadership, you know, are not adults, or even the threat or possibility. So I think this is very, very damaging to the American brand and for leadership that would like to erode the U.S. government's ability to keep its contracts. This is all very convenient. It's too convenient. It's inconceivable to me that the candidates who are leading in the polls could lead in the polls without massive entrainment technology. So why this is happening and who wants this is pretty terrifying. And that's enough to terrify any money manager. Okay, another reason is financial leadership. There are too many speculators with too much money in the markets. It's part of loose monetary policy for many years. And they are disconnected from total economic return. If you sit down with the top pension funds, they are not disconnected from total economic return. They're deeply interested on how the economy overall works and that sensible policies happen. But you've got too much money in the hands of speculators who are just looking to, you know, get their quarterly fix. And the problem is when trouble comes, they cut and run and behave in very short-term ways. What that means is, as I said before, the possible scenarios in any particular market and the overall markets are there's greater variability, both up and down in terms of prices. And it's expensive for an enterprise and individual to alike to plan for or be prepared to manage that kind of variability. But it's the world we're going into, and in the middle of it, there's enormous opportunities. So I think it's very important in everything we do in our lives, in particularly in our local politicians or in any prizes we work with, anything you can do to support good leadership, the more of us who will support and really back good leadership, the more hopefully we can get that kind of ethic going virally. And again, what you want are you want people who care not only about the return to the enterprise, but the total economic return and take responsibility for the whole. In the wrap-up section on books for 2016, three of the books I chose were in fact on leadership, and I recommend them to you. Check out the books for 2016. In the wrap-up, the last thing I want to say about leadership is one of the most important conditions precedent to getting good leaders is transparency. I'm going to post my slides from the ANP conference that I attended this last weekend. And one of the things I focused on was the importance of transparency to getting good leaders. And I will put those slides and give a brief description up on the website if you're interested. I talked a lot about how to gather your power to live a free and inspired life and the role and the importance of creating transparency to help you do that. Okay, so let's turn to the markets, which is the topic on everybody's mind this week. The markets have been down and choppy. Of course, when you consolidate like this, you go down, then you come back up, then you go down, and the downs are more than the ups. Here's the reality. The S&P is under great pressure. If we break the 1860 line, which is basically the 2015 low, and we stay through it, we could be in for a 15 to 25% correction, a deep one. And given the frustration, there is a chance of a spiral down, even though the fundamentals do not support it. But if people are angry enough and negative enough, we can always talk ourselves into it. The S&P closed down today. It's down for the year 7.25%. We broke the 1860 line yesterday this week and then bounced back up through it. Well, we closed at 1859 and then came up through it. So, but keep an eye on that line and let's see what happens next week. It's clearly under pressure. And again, it's down 7.25%. A 10% correction is perfectly normal. I really think a 5 to 15% is perfectly normal. But if you look at what's happening in the market, we could get 15 to 25. Gold now up for the year, almost 3%. Silver is flat for the year. Oil down 14%, and it's now down 80% in the last 2 years. That is absolutely stunning. The DAX in Europe, in euros, down almost 10%. Wait a minute, my page jumped. Down almost 10%. China, large caps, down 13.3%. The developed markets, minus North America, down almost 9%. UK and Japan now in a bear market. They're down 20% from their high. The emerging markets is down 9.6% for the year, and in the last year, it's down 30.42%. Again, I think at some point we're going to get some real opportunities there, but not yet. The bond aggregate ETF is now up 0.73% for the year. TLT, the 20-year Treasury ETF, is the star performer. It's up 3.87% earlier this week. It was up 5%. Junk, as I said before, is down 4% for the year, and it's down 16% in the last year. Commodities index, ouch, down 11% already this year, on top of what it was down the last 2 years. Very deep. U.S. dollar index is up a tiny amount. It's basically flat for the year. The Baltic Dry Index is in a swan dive down, and that is not good news. It really, Zero Hedge exaggerating once again said the global economy had come to a halt, but the Baltic Dry Index hasn't come to a halt, but it's certainly taken quite a swan dive. Charles Hugh Smith had a great piece, and I wanted to read some of it because I know it affects or describes a dynamic that many people are dealing with in the developed world. And the link is to it is up on the blog. There is another reason for falling velocity. People like me who have saved all their lives realize that their savings, no matter how much, will never throw off enough money to allow retirement unless I live off principal. This is especially so since one can reasonably expect Social Security to be phased out, indexed out, or dropped altogether. Accordingly, I realize that when I get to the point where I can no longer work, I'll be living off capital and not interest. This is an incentive to keep working and not to spend. That was one of his readers who posted to him. So he responds, "Thank you, Mike, for highlighting the devastating long-term impact of the Federal Reserve zero interest rate policy. And P.S., that's one of the reasons why I believe it's so important for the Fed to raise interest rates, because of what it's doing to savers. With the real return on savings near zero or even negative for those who have to pay soaring rents, healthcare insurance premiums, college tuition, those savings for retirement are losing the Red Queen's race. No matter how much they save, the income will be too paltry to support retirement. This has three extremely negative consequences. Those seeking a return above zero are forced to put their savings at risk in boom and bust markets that tend to reward only those who get into the bubble expansion early and exit early. These boom and bust markets tend to savage the assets of the middle class when they blow up, but do little to rebuild those assets in the bubble expansion phase, as prudent investors who were burned in the previous bubble bust shun risk assets. The second negative consequence is the structural pressure on spending, as those saving for retirement must sacrifice current spending to pile up capital to spend during retirement. No wonder the velocity of money is in a free fall. Everyone hoping to retire on more than cat food has set aside more of their earnings because they cannot count on any future earnings on capital. The third consequence is the destruction of middle-class retirement. When a 500,000 nest egg earns a miserable $15,000 a year, a 3% annual yield, saving enough to generate a middle-class income in retirement is beyond the reach of what's left of the middle class. Very, very astute comment from Charles Hugh Smith.